Ladies and gentlemen, please rise for the playing of our national anthem.
Baseball fans, you're listening to Babes, Babes.
Welcome back to another episode of Babes, Babes. This is actually a big one for us. It's our Phil Rizzuto episode. It's episode number 10. Unfortunately today we don't have Kelsey Bird. She's probably in London somewhere, like pub crawling, if I'm being honest. I don't know actually what time is it in London. Might be a little too early for that. But she is there. She's there with her family and they are going to be attending the London series between the Cubs and Cards. So very excited for her. So today I am joined by my co-host Mads and a very special guest, Jessica Kleinschmidt. Jess is a baseball fan from Reno, Nevada. She is a broadcaster for the Oakland A's radio network, which is why we're wearing our green. I don't know if you noticed that.
Love it. Appreciate it.
And she is also the host of a new awful announcing podcast called, it's not awful though. That's the name of it. Awful announcing podcast called Short and to the Point. She previously worked for MLB.com and NBC Sports Bay Area. Jess, welcome to Babes Babes.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited to be here.
Thanks for being here. Yeah, we're excited to dig in a little bit and learn about your background in baseball and just we'll have fun.
Definitely.
So we always start our episode with an icebreaker question. We call it around the horn because we all go around and answer the question. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to toss it to Mads for that question.
Okay.
So today's question is, what is your favorite City Connect uniform?
Oh, gosh.
And what's the worst one, too?
Oh, the worst one's the Giants. Oh, yeah. The Giants is the worst one. I don't like the Giants, but it reminds me of Gatorade. Like the worst flavor Gatorade too. I think the best one, I will say the Baltimore ones that just came out are pretty dope. I like how they're sleek but they're fun, and I think that those are definitely my newest favorites. But I really like the Washington Nationals with the cherry blossoms. Those are really gorgeous too. I really like those for sure.
Yeah, those are pretty.
Yeah.
I'd have to say the Marlins. Like, I love theirs. I think it's so different and like vibrant. And then the worst, that's for my favorite, obviously. Worst one, yeah, the Giants is pretty bad. Red Sox, like, I would say Red Sox because the yellow is like weird, but I know it's for like the Boston Marathon bombings. I think that's what it's for. So like, I don't know. There's some like growing on me.
I do love the Padres ones too. Bob Melvin was my manager for 3 years, and to see him in pink like made my day. I love that.
Yes. Yeah, I think as a spectator too, like it's their like shirts and stuff are just more fun to wear. Yes. I have to go with the Rockies as the worst. I think that they're god awful with the like evergreen trees on them.
Yeah,
they look like the license plates.
Right. They're kind of like blending in like a weird void too. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think my favorite might actually be the Angels. I think I like
that one's like, great.
They have like the red and white stripes on the like sleeve cuff. And I don't know, it just gives me like 50s, 60s vibes.
That could arguably be one of the better ones too. I like those a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. How fun. Well, thanks for answering that.
Sure.
Do you want to kick us off with we have a long list of questions, so we'll get it going.
Yeah. Yeah. So our first question is, what was your first job in baseball?
My first, I'll make it specific because I guess like my first big paycheck was with MLB.com's Cut Four. Before that, I was freelancing for a lot of places. Like I wrote for, you know, FanGraphs. I wrote for like all these small little baseball websites that aren't even around anymore. My first baseball job was Cut Four, and this was back when they were blogging. So they had a blog section to it, and it was a really beautiful story. And you guys were talking about the London series. One of my best friends, Melanie Newman, she's going to be doing play-by-play for BBC for them. And I called her one day, and I was getting ready to quit the industry. I'm like, F this, like, I'm not doing it. Not a good vibe, not a good time. I gave it 6 months to try it. And I said, I'm getting paid, but I'm getting paid like $200 a month to blog. I can't live off of this. And so I called her and I said, I'm out, I'm done. And she was like, absolutely not. Like, if you quit, how the hell am I supposed to try to make something out of myself in the industry? And not even an hour later, MLB.com calls me. So that was like where I got my big break. And that's when NBC recruited me. And then that's when the A's knew me through NBC. So that was the big one. That's what got my name out there. And I wasn't just blogging. They gave me a YouTube show, and that's what I figured out the gift of gab. And now I get to do broadcasts and stuff. So that was like the first big one. And now that I'm at the ballpark all the time, I'm still talking to the people I worked with, like Mad, you know, Brian Hoke. I worked with him, and I started my relationship with him and all the beat writers, and of course the A's and everything. And it was also cool because Cut Four was about the different stuff of baseball, like the funky stuff, what they were wearing, what they were talking about in the dugout, or the bubble gum they were chewing, or, you know, the wives and the kids and everything like that, which was my favorite part, in addition to, of course, the stats and all of that. But that was the first big one for me.
That's awesome. Really encouraging. Yeah. I mean, because I feel like that's where we're at right now, is that like freelancing, just like busting our asses. But I feel like even these little things that come our way, we can't say no to, because you just never know like what kind of door it's going to open.
Absolutely. I went through that completely. Yeah.
And it does seem like those little things that I'm like, ugh, like, I don't know if I want to do that. But then they end up opening like such a huge opportunity.
And, you know, it's the hard work too, like the behind the scenes stuff. I always wanted to be in front of the camera, but there was a point in my life where I'm like, I wasn't loving it, because I was talking to an inanimate object. Right. And I'm kind of a class clown where I like a reaction, and I wasn't really getting one. And so when I started that, I was like, maybe I shouldn't be in front of the camera. I shouldn't be on the radio because it's not good. But because of my behind the scenes stuff, the blogs, like the written word and knowing what I'm supposed to do, the production work, it helped me now that I'm on air, like so much, because you understand what your producers, your engineers are going through, because you once had to do what they were doing, or at least you have like a good scope of it. So every little thing is only going to make you better, and it's going to humble you too. You know, like, it was not an easy journey for me. I wanted to quit multiple times. Kim Ang just told me that recently. That's not a name drop, but knowing that Kim Ang wanted to quit 400 times like I did, I was like, okay, cool. And if it wasn't for me understanding what everybody else was going through, and I don't treat those people like crap because I know what they're going through, because I see a lot of talent that treats their producers like absolute dog shit, and I don't want to be one of those people because I understand what they're going through. So it's very important to say yes to everything while you can, because one day you're going to be able to have so many opportunities where you're going to be able to say no to those things, and that's when you know you've made it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Did you always know that you wanted to be a sports reporter? Like, when did you actually decide?
Oh yeah, I played baseball actually, like with the boys, until I had to switch to softball for collegiate reasons. And I just remember I went to my first A's game. This is the coolest thing ever too. My first A's game when I was like 10, and the moment I sat down, Eric Chavez hit a home run, and I remember looking at the program thinking, who is this guy? And that was the same week that I switched from first to third base, and me and this guy shared a birthday, definitely a few years apart. But I also looked in the program, and this guy this other player, his home resided in Reno, Nevada, which is where I lived at the time. And the guy who happened to be residing in Reno happens to be my manager now, Mark Kotze. So that was a cool moment. And this Eric Chavez moment, I fell in love with him as a player. I was like, I want to swing. I want to be able to adopt it. Right next to him was Bobby Crosby, and Bobby Crosby wore his socks up. And that's what I did as a mid infielder. So I wanted to do that. And driving home, I was like, I'm going to watch everything that Eric Chavez does. And I told my dad, I'm going to be an A's reporter one day. And I got to actually tell Eric Chavez this story when we inducted him in the A's Hall of Fame last year. And we had a scrum, and because he's a former A's player and he was one of the only guys that the A's have given extensions to. And I just remember being like, I should tell him this story. Like, it's silly, whatever. And we had a scrum, but I got like nervous and intimidated, which if you met me, you know, that never happens. But it was like, this is the guy that like is the reason I'm here right now, getting a paycheck from the Oakland A's. And I chickened out completely. But as I was leaving the tunnel to go cover his ceremony, he was standing there by himself. And I was like, Jessica, grow a couple and go talk to him. And I did. And I was like, hey, Eric, I just wanted to let you know I'm one of the A's broadcasters and the reporter, and you're the reason why I'm here. And he's like, what do you mean by that? And I told him the story. And I felt like I was like writing it in a tweet. I'm like, just make it quick. Do it in 280 characters or less. Don't get weird about it. And I did. And he was like, oh my gosh, that's so nice. I'm glad you stopped me to tell that story. And then I run up to my boss and I was like, because you gave me this opportunity, that 12-year-old, 11-year-old, 10-year-old girl got to tell that story. Unfortunately, that game when I was younger with my dad was the last Major League Baseball game we ever went to. And I got to tell that story on an A's radio broadcast when I was hosting the show yesterday. So it's just like stuff like that, that reminds me I'm supposed to be here, you know? Absolutely. So it's just things like that.
Can I stop the recording real quick? Cause like,
are you getting emotional?
Making me cry. It's so relatable. I mean, yeah. I'm not there yet, but like, you're so right about like all these little tidbits that open our eyes to like, this is where we're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's so encouraging. So sweet.
Yeah, no, it was really cool. And the fact that I never thought I'd be able to tell Eric Chavez that story. I literally was like, I have to tell him that story. And I was able to text my brother, like, I just got to tell Eric the story. And he was like, oh my gosh. And it was like, I wish my dad was here, you know, like, cause he would have listened to every single one of my broadcasts without hesitation. And unfortunately he passed away when I was 19, but he knew when I told him I was going to be an A's reporter, the best part was he was like, okay, like, how are we going to do that? How are we going to make that happen? Instead of being like, Jessica, come on. Like, okay. I was like, no, Dad, I don't think you understand. I've told everybody this, every guy I've been on a date with, every person I've met, I'm like, you know, I'm going to be an A's reporter one day. And not only am I doing that, but I'm on the broadcast and I'm one of the first female broadcasters for the organization. And it's just like, I didn't want to just stop at one thing. I wanted to continue doing what I was doing.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm over here like,
oh. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but who would you say is like the number one person who like helped you get into baseball and just like sports in general?
It was actually my little brother. Cause My parents were phenomenal, where they didn't force anything on us as far as, you know, you have to do this, you have to do that. They did want us to do an extracurricular activity. And my brother was playing Little League and it was farm. So it was the pitching machine and they needed a right fielder. And it was about like getting the kids and the guys, like the guys in practice. And I was like, I'll stand out in right field. Sure. And so the moment I went out on the field and I threw the ball, I remember my dad was coaching. And I looked at him like, oh my gosh, like we created a monster. I had the best, like such a good arm. And I remember thinking that like, it was like rookie of the year where I threw it and everybody was like, what just happened? And the monster. So because my little brother needed a right fielder, I was able to fall in love with baseball and of course the A's too. And just the fact that I had so much support, even my little brother, who's very quiet, was always like, you're going to do this too. And he was a really good baseball player too. Like he had scouts looking out for him, like coincidentally in the Bay Area where I am now. And, You know, I think the Yankees were looking at him at one point, and he was a really good, I think he could have been a really good minor league ball player, but he kind of lost the love for it once my dad passed away. But it was because of those men in my life that I, A, was not intimidated by men, because I had these two amazing men in my life who just told me, like, you're not only going to do this, but we're going to try to do our best to help you in any way. And I played baseball. I was with the guys. So me being in the clubhouse just feels like my childhood again. And so that definitely helped. And as time went on, you know, like, I remember watching Dallas's perfect game, and now he's on the broadcasts with me, and, you know, just stuff like that. And of course, I mentioned Eric Chavez and Kim Ng. I remember covering her so many times, saying she almost got this job. She almost got this job. And then finally I get to interview her last year with the Marlins. And I was like, why'd you keep going? And she's like, I almost quit. And I was like, oh my gosh, you are a normal person. And just stuff like that, you know? And then of course, you know, Melanie Newman and Danny Wexelman, they're the reason I haven't quit a billion times. And I thank God every day for them. And, you know, people like that. And it's, there's a big list. I'm very lucky to have a big list.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, it's like those people, I think, that just kind of inspire you to keep going. Like, mm-hmm. You know, and then you figure out like all the things that you have in common, like, you know, so relatable that you wanted to quit and they wanted to quit. And yeah, it's like,
definitely.
They're just like me, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I wish I had Danny Wexelman's body, but that's not going to happen. Yeah.
So you did mention that you knew you always wanted to do this. So when you went to college, did you study like communications, or what was your like background in college and kind of?
I tried college, but I'm actually a community college dropout. But I took like journalism 101, journalism 102. And I was like, this is expensive and boring. I don't want to do this. So I just remember thinking like, why don't I just blog for fun? And I blogged for fun and just tweeted out every single one of my articles and then tweeted out all of my podcasts. And I just like created my own brand / journey. And I just remember thinking like, I can't learn anything in the classroom that I couldn't teach myself. And I just knew if I just connected with my followers and like these famous people that I met and like just was curious about things, and they would invite me onto their podcasts, right? Like, we're curious about this girl. Like, she always has something to say on Twitter. And I would back that up with like who I actually am, because my personality on social media is exactly who I am in real life. I just cuss a lot more in real life because I can't do that on the broadcast. But it was just kind of like from that. And it was teaching myself how to do it. And then I remembered, like, you know, it's no different from a baseball player. You're not going to be like, oh, you didn't go to college. Like, that's embarrassing. Like, no, like some of them like make really good, great careers after not going, you know, skipping college. I'm not saying that I think college is unnecessary. It's definitely important, but my education just came into a different way. So I attempted college, but I quit and then just tried to create my own path.
Yeah, good for you. I mean, my background was actually in law, and like I still work in law, and I have worked in law for like 15 years now. But I mean, I hope none of my coworkers are listening. It's not my passion.
Right. And that's okay. Yeah.
And so like, you know, you do like take different avenues. You start to figure out what your passions are and you follow those, and or hopefully you follow them. But you're so right. Like, education has nothing to do with that. If it's something that you're passionate about, then you're going to be so much better than everybody else, because that's like what you love to do.
Yeah. And I mean, like, just from work, like if I have a question about a baseball thing, I think Mark Kotze is probably a really good resource to go ask those questions to. Right. Or if, you know, Tony Kemp's a veteran, I'm like, you know, I don't understand what's going on with this. And like, I have a good enough relationship where they won't think it's a stupid question. I'm like, hey, I have to talk about you on the broadcast. You know, how can I convey your message that people understand why you're struggling at the plate? You know, and Tony Kemp's a good example. Like, he was struggling, and I'm like, how would you like me to tell people what's going on with you? And he's educating myself, but he's also educating those listening, but also we're developing a good relationship where he can trust me and saying like, I know she's going to relay this message to the best of her ability, staying true to who I am, staying true to the sport. And at the same time, I am an analyst and he went 0 for 24. I'm not going to lie and say he's doing something right when the numbers prove he isn't. So it's just stuff like that. You know, like if I go to the source and ask them the question, that's something you definitely can't. You learn that in school, like how to find the answers. But if that person or that subject is right in front of me, why not just ask them myself?
Yeah. I totally agree. And I think tapping into resources is a skill set, not necessarily like something that's learned.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I'm like looking at our list of questions and I'm like, we kind of touched on these next two. So John, I don't want to throw you off by like asking different questions, but I guess I'll just ask this. So on Tuesday, June 13th, I think most people know that the A's had a reverse boycott. The fans had a reverse boycott. So could you just tell us a little bit about that? I know you can't talk much about like actually moving to Vegas, but if you could just talk about the boycott a little bit and the experience.
Yeah, well, the experience is amazing because, you know, over 27,000 fans showed up in support of their team and the guys loved it so much because, you know, I think of, and I was talking to James Caprillion about this later, and I said, you know, I think of King Felix, and when he's pitching, his ERA is actually impacted by the amount of noise the fans make. It juices him up, you know? And I asked James about it, and he's like, yeah, like, that's what we crave. And you have to remember, this is a team full of younger players who haven't had the major league experience yet. And I talked, Ramon Laureano was my post-game interview. And I said, you know, how did it feel with, you know, 27,000 fans behind you? Mind you, he's in right field where the bleachers are very well known. They have the drums going. So he's the perfect guy to ask this. And he's been on the team for several years for an A's player. And he was like, no, I mean, this is what I'm used to. It's 2018, it's 2019 vibes. And, you know, we talked to Kotze about it and he knows the passions there. Kotze spent time in the outfield in the Coliseum too. He was a former player. And he said, he started his career with the A's. He knows the passion those fans have. And it doesn't matter if there's 27,000 fans there. It doesn't matter if there's 10 or 5,000 fans there. It's always loud. And it's always something that you can't describe, and they're so passionate and they care so much about that team. So Kotz himself said, like, understandably why there's so much passion behind, and you want to call it anger, sure, but it was just one of those moments that I was so lucky to be a part of. And I was also part of the wild card game that the A's, the Coliseum surpassed the wild card attendance record, 55,000 fans. Mind you, it's in a football stadium, so they're able to hold that many fans. But it was just such a cool experience for me because post game, we're getting phone calls about these fans who were just electric and adrenaline going through their bodies and just happy and you know, and the team won too, and it was in the midst of a 7-game win streak, and you can't fake that, you know. And I know people are going to say what they will about the A's and their payroll, but, you know, I mean, we still won 7 games. We swept the Brewers. It wasn't like those weren't accidental. We split a series with the best team in baseball, the Tampa Rays. So those things happen. And if it wasn't for those fans showing up, it might be a different story, a different answer to your question. And so I feel like when the players are aware of what's going on, they feel it, and they feel it when it's not there too. You know, so it was just an awesome moment, and I wasn't feeling great, but I also knew that like that didn't matter because the guys were happy and they were backed by so many fans, and it was an amazing experience.
Yeah, it was
so like, awesome to see.
Sorry, Mads, go ahead.
No, you're good. I was just going to say it was so awesome to see like on social media, obviously like it's not the same when you're just looking at pictures and videos, but obviously you can tell like what the vibes were, and
yeah,
it seemed pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of pull quotes from fans who, you know, are obviously upset, who've, you know, been A's fans their whole life. And I mean, they've had a lot of history too. And so it is probably really hard for them to deal with right now. So what was the energy of the 7-game win streak? Like, were you all just like, so did it feel like World Series vibes? Was it just so like ecstatic, intense, and
yeah, I mean, a lot of the games did feel like playoff games because it was like the A's shifted. They had that shift that we were kind of craving. And, you know, just as somebody who's covered a lot of these guys, like Aledmys Diaz was on the Houston Astros. He won a World Series with the Houston Astros. I remember the A's playing him thinking like, oh, stop pitching to him. He's just going to hit it off of you. He's just like, he's going to put the ball in play. He finds the gaps. And for the A's to acquire him, I was like, cool, he gets to do that for the A's now. Jace Peterson, these guys. It's like the guys that you see the scouting reports, but the beginning of the season that wasn't working out. And Kotz himself said, you know, when the A's were playing the Rays this earlier in the season, the Rays won like what, a trillion games in a row heading into the season. And the A's were embarrassed off the field multiple times by that team. And then they go up against Zach Eflin and Tyler Glasnow. And those are solid players, mm-hmm. you know? And so I wouldn't compare it necessarily to a World Series run, but it definitely got the attention of national media, which is what we all crave for rooting for a team, especially for covering a team. At the end of the day, I want people to listen to my broadcasts over in New York, you know, and then like just things like that. And so it was just cool. And just to see the guys happy and the guys getting the recognition they deserved, you know, Ryan Noda gets on base. I think he's a little bit below a 400 on base percentage right now, but Este Uy Ruiz is getting compared to Ricky Henderson. If you are a casual baseball fan, you don't watch any baseball, you know who Ricky Henderson is.
Absolutely.
And he, you know, he's a Hall of Famer. And for Este to be the guy to be in the same, not just sentence, but history books as Ricky Henderson, like that's not something you would take lightly. And he's stealing sometimes 2 bags a game, you know? So it's good to see that they're getting the recognition that they deserve. And it's a numbers game. We're defining these guys by numbers. So if they're not winning, nobody's knowing how they're actually doing. Cause I can tell you all till I'm blue in the face, like Ricky Henderson and Este, like they're being compared. It's like, yeah, but the A's have only won 12 games, you know? So it was really important and good for the guys and good for their confidence and for the clubhouse as well.
My brother actually has a Ricky Henderson ball. So,
oh, wow.
Yes, I know. Isn't that cool?
Usually charges for autographs. Did he have to pay for it?
No, he, like we were at a game and he got it. Well, I don't know. I think this was right before I was born. So like I was there, but not.
Gotcha.
That's cool. But yeah, no, I think even the energy around, like you said, around the nation, like it was drawing attention. I, as a like underdog lover, I was so happy and like excited to see the success there. That was really cool.
A lot of people were. That's what was cool too, is a lot of people were like, you know what? Good for the A's. Yeah. Even like when the Rays were, because we were playing the Rays for the June 13th game, and the Rays were like, you know what? Good for them. Like, this is really cool. And because the Rays understand what it's like to have the low payroll and still have to have a product on the field. And it was cool to have their support as well.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, I hope they'll go on another run like that. That was fun.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite interview that you've ever done? Can you think of, or you probably have several. But.
Yeah, I do have several. I mean, Kim Ng was pretty cool because it's like one that I've always wanted. I got to interview Joey Votto once. I'm a big Joey Votto fan. And he was just a brilliant interview because he would study Barry Bonds to nauseam. So being able to interview him is really cool. I will use any excuse to interview Tony Kemp because I can ask him why he's struggling at the plate and it's bigger than baseball. He's always a good interview. Matt Chapman's a really good interview too, believe it or not. Chris Bassett was good. Bob Melvin's always wonderful. Kotz is a good interview too. Buster Posey was really good. Brandon Belt's a really fun interview as well. Those are the ones that come to mind. Yeah.
Have you done any like speaking engagements or events around like women in baseball that you can think of?
A little bit. I've been on panels and stuff. There was one panel I was on just last season. It was like for Phillies versus Angels or Phillies versus Astros in the World Series. And it was all women on that panel too. And if I can give you guys one lesson and like just some advice, because at the end of the day, if you guys want to,
this is a question that we actually have on our
camera. Perfect.
Perfect.
So be the first you, because when I first got in the industry, I wanted to be Katie Nolan. I wanted to be Michelle Beadle. I wanted to be Jessica Mendoza. And I remember one day, it was actually Field Yates. I'm not name dropping. It's funny today. I think his wife's due any minute, but he's doing like an NFL live show. And we're just like, I was messaging him and I'm like, Field, like, I don't know. I can't like figure out why I'm not fitting in and like what's going on. He was like, just be yourself. And I remember thinking like, okay, Field, like, thanks for the advice. And then I woke up the next morning and I was like, why don't I just be myself? And I remember thinking that, and it was more than just the career, right? Like, and I'm dating now. So it's like, I've always dated, I've been dating, gosh, forever. But when I was dating, I was like, I'd rather them get to like reject Jess, that who was herself. Career-wise, same thing. If I'm tweeting out something that I'm like being honest about, I go to bed at night knowing I was honest. You know, and so that's why I'm successful, because for me, there's no competition when they're not Jess Kleinschmidt, but I'm also not Katie Nolan. Like, and I think that that's what's important, is because I offer something that somebody else can't, and vice versa. They offer something that I can't. That's why I have certain guests. I'm like, the reason why I have you on the show is because I don't know these things. And if I don't know, other people might not know. So that's the number one rule that I live by, is being myself will make me sleep better at night. It makes me confident in knowing that I don't know everything. And it makes me confident knowing that if I don't know everything, I get to have a fun time figuring it out. You know what I mean? So that's the most important advice that I have received and I'm offering to you. Yeah.
Thank you. So, and I like needed to hear that. Like, I'm still in college, like, I'm young, and I'm always, like, posting, like, voicing my opinions, like, on Twitter, mostly, like maybe TikTok, but sometimes I get scared, because I'm like, okay, like, I'm being myself, like, I'm giving my opinions, but, like, is this going to affect me career-wise, when, like, people are like, oh, she's a diehard Yankees fan, so she might be biased against, like, the Red Sox, so, like, sometimes I get scared of that stuff, so, like, I try to, like, I never say anything, like, negative about anyone, or, like, I'm very, like, professional. Well, that's about okay. It, so.
And right now you don't have to be biased against anything. Right now you get to create whatever you want to create. And it's not like you're being put in a situation where, like, if you want to write an article on something, that's okay to start with the Yankees. And you're going to be biased. It's so difficult not to be. And I struggle with that too. Like, sometimes, like just the other day, they're like, Jessica, stop like cheering for Tony, he went 0-for-24, and I'm like, I know, but he's such a great guy. And it's like, it's hard to like not do that, right? And and Tony himself would be like, well, Jess, I am struggling, like that is what it is. And so that's difficult, but that's part of the journey too, though, Mads, is you are allowed to figure out what works for you. And then you also, I know as women, we're gonna get like bullshit on social media. I feel like that's just how it is. I make a really good, fun brand off of dunking on dudes on Twitter, because they ask me stupid questions. And sometimes it's like, it's not even necessarily me being a smart ass. It's me being like, well, that's not actually not what happened, because I just confirmed that with the guy you're talking crap about and stuff like that. But this is part of it. And I don't want people to say, I don't care what other people think. Everybody cares what other people think. It's as if it doesn't let you don't stay up all night freaking out about those things, because at the end of the day, you want to be safe. You don't want to do anything crazy to like let people know where you are at 24/7, or, you know, be inappropriate to a certain extent. And you're right. You do, at the end of the day, everything you post on social media is your resume, right? Like, that's my article. Yeah. That's my podcast. That's what got me my start, was people saw that I was a normal person on social media. And then I became a reporter and doing all of those things. And the reason why a lot of people hire me is because of my following, and I can use that as my platform. And so those worries are okay to have. Those worries are absolutely okay to have. Just don't let them like terrify you to the point where you're scared to do anything. Cram the fucking content down their throat. Let them listen, let them watch. And, you know, be true to yourself. And honestly, the beauty of you being young is you get to create your own thing. Call it a brand, whatever, that's fine. But like, figure that out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
your worries mean that you get to build off of that. So you're like, I'm, and don't even make it a worry about like, I'm worried about like ruining my future career. Like, that's way, like, give yourself a break. You have a long life, a long and short life. It's more about for you thinking, I'm worried that this may not be the message that I want to get across. I don't mean that in like what you're wearing or how you look. It's like, if I want to make a piece of content, I want to make sure that I'm coming across as accurate or as I possibly can. Cause I've seen your TikToks and they're brilliant. They're brilliant. Yeah. You keep up with the trends. You know what's going on. People want that stuff. That's important.
Yeah.
And you can't get a start without being like Jared Karabas is with DraftKings now, right?
Yeah.
Everybody knows he's a Red Sox fan. Like, you don't have to lie about that. I'm an A's fan. Doesn't mean I'm going to write everything A's related 24/7. Like, I have to do my research on the opposing team. You know, I tried to get Trey Turner on the show recently. Like, these things, like, I don't just stick to A's stuff. And so those things are important. So the identity of figuring out what you want to show off, that's all part of the journey.
Yeah. No, totally. Yeah. Thank you.
Of course.
Yeah,
that was actually so helpful.
Absolutely. And you, DM me anytime. It's whatever you need. I'm here to help.
Thank you so much. Yes. Yeah, I definitely will take you up on that.
Not a problem.
So I guess to kind of like tie this all together, can you tell us about your new podcast, like what you're doing over there and like kind of how you started it?
Yeah. Awful announcing and the comeback gave me this beautiful opportunity. I missed writing a lot. And so I was like, I just want a place to write. And I told them, like, I also kind of want a show where like, it doesn't have to be 100% baseball and not even 100% sports. And he was like, cool, like, let's draw it up. And so it's called Shortened to the Point because I'm 5-0, but also I don't know how to just get to my point sometimes. And that's kind of the fun thing. As a reporter, I'm doing better about making my questions shorter. But I want to know every little thing about every little thing. And that's where my guests come in. Jared Karabas was my first guest. And for me, it was knowing about, you know, why did you leave Barstool and what happened there? And so we talked about that. My guest tomorrow is Will Blackman. He's a former NFL player turned media broadcaster, but also he's really into wine. And I'm curious about wine. I get hungover drinking wine. I want to know how to not do that. So that's why I had that conversation. So for me, it's me being curious about, you know, somewhat sports related things, but like also what's going on in this world. And I'm so curious. And like, I love Oprah. So it's not just sports. I want to know like what's on your mind and why you decided to do this and why did you just continue? It was because you have a family to support or whatever. So that's ultimately the stuff that I'm interested in. And I love follow-up questions. And the reason why I'm good at them is because I want one question can be 45 questions and I'm going to ask 44 of them. So that's where that we launched about a month and a half ago but my mom passed away. So I took a hiatus off of it, but we're revamping it up again. So that's the second episode comes out tomorrow.
Congratulations.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
My favorite podcasts are honestly like when there's, you know, one thing that you have, like one of your loves, and then they talk about something that like, you know, nothing about. So you get to like, you know, like kind of relate on the first thing, but then also like learn things that you never knew, like a whole other world.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a really smart approach.
Hoping so. We'll see what happens.
That'll definitely do well. I'm so excited. So it's like, is it visual or like just audio?
It's both. So there's a YouTube channel and then on all where all platforms are podcast.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. I can't wait to listen.
You guys will like it for sure.
Can you tell us where to find it, where we can all find it?
Yeah. So we have a YouTube channel, the Comeback TCB on YouTube. And then, just wherever podcasts are. So like Apple, Spotify, those things. Yeah.
Very cool.
And awesome. I tweet everything out. So that helps. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, give Jessica a follow and go watch her podcast, listen to her podcast. As always, you can find us on Instagram at Babes Babes Podcast, on Twitter at Babes Babes Pod, Madison on Twitter at Major League Mad, me on Twitter at 90s Yanks Kid. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much.